Welcome to the High Velocity Radio Show. High Velocity Radio is brought to you by PSI Digital Media Experts, the market leader in delivering digital media services. From manufacturing millions of CDs and DVDs to turnkey e-commerce solutions and streaming high-definition video over their worldwide content distribution network, PSI has the solutions to meet your needs. Find PSI at psidiscs.com, psidiscs.com. The High Velocity Radio Show is where we celebrate innovative professionals producing better results in less time. Produced and directed by Lee Cantor and brought to you live from Radio X Studio in Atlanta, Georgia. Now here are your hosts, Todd Schnick and Stone Payton.
Welcome to the High Velocity Radio Show. This is your host, Stone Payton, and joining me in the studio this morning is our producer, Lee Cantor, and my good buddy and co-host, Todd Schnick. Good morning, Todd.
Morning, Stone. How are you this morning?
I am doing well, feeling good. Great spring morning. Did you get out and run today, or is it this one of the days that you trained for your upcoming marathon?
I haven't run today, but I did get out over the weekend, and it was very difficult. I had been training in cool weather, and to suddenly train, and it was hot. Took a lot out of me, sweat a lot, and it was a big adjustment. I was anticipating it, but I was surprised by how difficult it was.
Well, I see you got the memo. You wore the short sleeve High Velocity Radio official shirt today.
It's the first time since 2008 that it's been above 60 degrees in town, so this is good. Now I have to ask: did I see an email from you that came from like a modern phone over the weekend?
Oh, yeah, but I wasn't able to do it. We were with our buddy Don Rigby after we went to the jazz concert the other night, and I said, send this, but I didn't know how to do it. So Holly and Don kind of conspired to send that to you.
No, I thought I got an email from you yesterday from a smartphone.
Oh, I don't know anything about that. That's probably my 12-year-old.
Okay. I thought maybe you had joined the 21st century.
So. No, I mean, I can dial out, and I can answer, but I can't do much beyond that.
Your phone is the same one that Gecko uses in Wall Street. So
it's like one step past the can and the string, right?
Right. I was excited. I thought maybe you had joined the real world.
You know, that thing is there for my convenience. It's not there for you. It's for me. It's for my convenience.
Oh, yeah. I'm well aware of that.
So get us caught up on this marathon stuff before we start the rest of the show. Where are we? How far out? Can we watch you run here in Atlanta, or is it in some other town?
Oh, no, I'm running the marathon. It's actually a half marathon, 13.1 miles. I'm doing it in Nashville on April 24th. So just final couple of weeks of building up distance, then probably a week and a half out from the actual event, we'll taper down and just run small distances just so the body can heal and prepare and be ready to go on D-Day.
And half of the guests that we've had come through the High Velocity Radio Show are actually on your coaching staff, right?
Yes. No, it's no surprise to anybody that I made this big public deal and blogging about it and doing all that. I'm amazed at how many runners there are out there that have all kinds of infinite wisdom and advice and tips. Now they're sitting at home on their butt, but they've got the advice. But they got a lot of advice and wisdom and tips, absolutely.
But you started a whole separate blog to track this thing, right?
Absolutely.
And you've got Andrew Windham and Stephanie Lloyd and all these different people in the Radio X family that are coaching you through it.
Got that whole crew helping me, pushing me along. Yep.
So are you trying to raise money with it?
No. I'm just trying to get off my fat ass and actually become healthy again.
I'm looking for an angle. We need to talk to Lee. Maybe there's an angle to raise some money off of you.
Well, he said he would sponsor this thing, so we haven't talked about the number yet.
He can afford it. Are you going to take the High Velocity Cam with you?
Oh, I'm sure I will.
That ought to be a sight.
That will be a sight.
Well, tell us about our guest this morning.
We have a cool guest this morning on High Velocity. He is an inspirational speaker, a corporate trainer, consultant, and an author. Welcome to the show, Terry Barber.
Glad to be here.
What did you do this weekend? Anything exciting? Anything inspirational?
Yeah, you know, probably the most inspiring thing that I did was for the very first time in my life, I actually walked 18 holes of golf, and that was more than inspiring.
You know,
it was a marathon.
I played golf at a course in Las Vegas, Nevada, a very exclusive private course. It's one of those courses where the high rollers at the casinos get to play, and there's no tourists there. There's no golf courts, and you have caddies. And I got the fortunate chance once to have an actual caddy, and I walked. It was an entirely different game, and it was phenomenal. I loved it. I wish that it was more conducive to go walking every time I play golf.
The best thing about a caddy is that they find your ball.
Well, and mine had to work and labor really hard. But I got to tell you, you know, you watch these guys on TV and they set up the putts for you and they kind of tell you the yardage and say, I hit a 7-iron here and watch out for the trees and the wind, and they kind of gauge the wind and all that. And it was amazing what a difference that makes in the game. I thought, hey, it's one thing for a caddy to tell a professional who knows what they're doing what to do. It's another thing for them to tell a hack like me. But it was amazing how helpful it was and how it changes the game. It was stunning. But walking was a phenomenal experience. I thought it, in the southern Nevada desert, I thought it was going to be hard, but it was actually quite a wonderful experience.
Well, anybody who plays golf should do it at least once. It is a great, exhilarating experience.
Well, my attitude on golf is it's a great game, except when you're actually playing it.
Well, we interrupt the Golf Channel now for the High Velocity Radio Show. Tell us about the title of this book and what compelled you to write it, Terry.
The inspiration factor. You know, for the most part, what I had found in working with so many within my client base, which has everything to do with a host of NCI comprehensive cancer centers from around the country, I could continue to see that there was just this tremendous need to find a balance between thinking and feeling. And so many times within the corporate world, we think that if we can just know enough, that we can do enough to actually make something happen. The truth is that we've got to have a great balance between thinking and feeling. We've got to be able to create an environment where people can really believe. And it begins with the base of the organic institution itself, helping those who work for us, who represent our brand inside. They're really our best ambassadors to believe in us and believe in what we're doing and carry our message forward. And so my desire in writing this book was, how can we create tools and handles and specific coaching guidelines for bosses and supervisors to inspire those who work within their organization to carry the brand forward in a way that no one else can do, and make them feel super good about what they're doing, their significant part within the organization, and how together they can fulfill their mission.
You know, it strikes me that when it comes to this business of being inspirational, there are probably some acts of commission and acts of omission that cause us not to be what we could be. What are some acts of omission, some things that people don't do that they could and should do that would be truly inspirational and impact the bottom line?
Well, you know, I actually have a whole section of my book I call Inspiration Busters.
What a great name.
And it fits within that category of omission. It would be things like forgetting how important it is to give an employee and a worker some autonomy, helping them find some space that they can operate within certain parameters and guidelines, and give them full a sense of authority and empowerment to do so. There's nothing that steals and busts inspiration more than to feel like an individual who doesn't need to be is being micromanaged.
Do you ever run across a situation where executives in an organization approach you and say, my team needs to be inspired, so I'm going to pay you money to do it, and they're not inspired themselves, and does that torpedo the whole process?
Here's a check. Come inspire my people.
You make me think that you heard my story from last week, because the story I have is about an actual, it's a huge company here in Atlanta. I won't call any names. So I was requested to please come inspire their employees. And it was a group that was actually based in Alpharetta. And this was so similar to what you're talking about. So I walk in, and there are probably 125, 150 people in this room. And the supervisor for this particular company stands up, and in her opening line, she says, "Okay, gang, I have good news and I have bad news. Which one do you want to hear first?" Of course, everybody in the crowd is saying, "Bad news, give us the bad news first." So she says, "Okay, the bad news is you guys suck."
Quote, oh, my.
Unquote. "You guys suck. You have done just such a pathetic job lately. I just almost don't know what to do. So therefore, the good news, I have brought in Terry Barber to inspire you people to do better."
Oh, that's outstanding. What a story.
True story.
But does that happen a lot? I mean, not maybe not to that extreme, but does that kind of scenario happen a lot? I bet it does.
Well, I think it does. People, for the most part, would like to think that inspiration within the organization is just going to happen organically. And they think that if they can just provide either some great massages from time to time, maybe some shoe shines, maybe some special picnic, maybe even some other kind of fun thing. I was with a group not too long ago where they had Dunkin' booths for the executives, and everybody cheered and rallied around it. And I really think that they believe, a lot of times executives believe, that if they can just create a so-called fun environment, that they create an inspired environment. But inspiration has much more to do with character and true qualities of leadership than it does have anything to do with activity and function.
Well, you know, you talk about 7 core principles of inspiration in your book. Could you share a couple with us and just sort of walk them through with us a little bit?
Yeah. Let me just hit them in bullet fashion, and then we can double-click on whatever maybe strikes your fancy. One is just the principle of authenticity, being comfortable with who you are and transparent. 2 is being able to connect with others' dreams, looking into the hearts and the latent abilities of other people and aligning them with what they do at work. Seeing others the abilities that they don't see in themselves, having the capacity to cast a vision for somebody's life. And then speak and walk with credibility, lining up your talk with your walk, and being able to have integrity with how you operate. It's one thing to say, look ahead, we have no fear, we only have opportunity, and then to operate out of scarcity and continue to function in a way that demonstrates no credibility. Use great stories as a way to inspire those who are around you. Become an effective user of what I consider to be corporate parables for today to teach lessons. And then help people reach their destination. It could very well be that the people that you inspire the most are on the wrong path. And the greatest thing that you could do for them is help them either adjust so that they're being more efficient and proficient towards the path they need to be on within your domain, or maybe even guide them into a completely different arena, which makes both parties happier and more fulfilled. And then last, it's what I consider to be create a new culture of inspiration, where you create an environment where you provide teaching moments, what I would refer to as moments of teachability, or when it comes down to it, when things go really bad, it's a chance not to get on somebody's case or to rattle somebody's cage, but to pull your team together and to say, wow, here's a teachable moment. What can we learn from what just happened? And use that to create a safe environment in an inspiring one.
How does an organization facilitate teaching moments? So someone says to you, okay, I get that, and I want to do that, that makes sense to me, I want to do more to help my people understand these things. How do you implement that?
Well, I began by looking at some great models from just our times that we live in. And one of the guys that I modeled this after was John Wooden, the great iconic coach from UCLA, who saw basketball as an object lesson for life. Was it important to him? Yeah. Was winning important? Well, anytime you've got a track record like him with 10 national championships, you can say winning was important. Was it the most important? No. What really became important to him was using every single thing and every element within the game of basketball to teach something about life and character. So when we think about our work today, what an opportunity to take a mad client incident and pull the team together and to say, you know, what can we learn from that? What is it that, how can we better respond? How can we be better servers to make sure this doesn't happen again? And more so than that, what can we learn from this that applies to how we treat our family, for how we treat others, even beyond work? When you have something happen whereby, for whatever reason, within your P&L, you don't make numbers. It's a great opportunity to pull people together and not to point fingers, but to ask the question, what can we learn from this? How can we turn this into a teachable moment? How can we respond to adversity in such a way that it propels us and does not hold us back? So that begins to create an environment for teachable kinds of moments. It's just modeling it. And after a while, what begins to happen, I've seen this happen with my own team, it almost becomes funny, where every time something with adversity or conflict arises, then the staff, it's the team who begins to say, oh, hold on a minute, I think we have a teachable moment here.
Well, you do have to, I mean, I think one of your goals probably is to help your management teams look for and identify those teachable. I bet you a lot of people don't really know one when it hits them in the eyes.
Well, I think I don't know that it's so much that they don't know it. I just think it's a different kind of perspective. It's one thing to be able to manage at it in a reactionary sort of way. That is, we wait till problems happen and then we respond, and we usually respond in ways that are not so positive, versus being able to say to a team with a vision up front, hey, we are a team, and part of our core value is how we deal with adversity. We're not going to be perfect. We're going to find mistakes. We're going to crash and burn from time to time. But I want you to know, as your leader, as your team leader, when that happens, we're going to learn from them. We're not going to point fingers. We're not going to reprimand. We are really and truly going to come together and learn from that as a team. And then if we need to provide some kind of coaching opportunity, or beyond that, even a disciplinary kind of action, that's fine. We'll do that on a one-to-one basis. But corporately, together, we're going to learn.
One of your principles is authenticity. Which that's applicable to so many different things in this modern world. You talk about that a successful leader must be vulnerable, transparent, and authentic. What do you mean by vulnerable? I'm intrigued by that.
It works kind of like this. Let me give you a little bit of background how I came to notice this particular principle. I noticed that when it comes to management, that managers, supervisors, bosses, they fall into one of two categories. Those who are really effective typically are the ones who are willing to say to their team, I'm really not perfect. I need you as my team to supplement, to complement my weaknesses, and to go to the place where you can even say, here are the things that I know I'm really good at. Here's some things that I know I really suck at. But with that, then be able to look, whether I look at Stone and say, you know, what I see in you is that you have an ability to connect the dots, to pull things together in a way that I don't have. And I need you to use your analytical kind of connectivity to help me in problem solving, because I don't do that real well. In so doing, I've become vulnerable because I've revealed where I am not strong. But I've also become affirming because I have now connected with something that he's good at, I'm not good at, that we can work together on. So that's all about being vulnerable and a willingness not to always wear a mask that says that I am impenetrable, I am unreachable. I was actually leading a seminar in LA about 3 months ago, absolute true story. And we do a thing within the seminar where we ask people to operate or to share a defining moment. And in so doing, one of the principles in defining moments is you have to talk about where you failed, something you screwed up in, and a lesson that you learned from it. And as we walk through this, one of the supervisors there began to say, I'm not really comfortable with this. So we passed him over. And then at the break, he came up to me because he had two or three of his subordinates in the room with him, and he pulled me over and he said, you no good SOB, the next time you do that, I'm going to just walk out of the room. If these people have any idea that I am less than who they think I am, they won't respect me. Well, that is an awful kind of position and a lot of pressure to put upon yourself, because the truth is, they already know that you're not perfect.
Right.
You just don't know that they know. So be transparent, be vulnerable about it, and use it as an opportunity to build trust and engagement and fulfillment rather than creating walls.
So you're telling these guys to be human and not supermen.
Not to be supermen. It's okay. And in so doing, you are walking in the principle of authenticity. I'm comfortable with myself, both in my mistakes as well as in my strengths.
And another principle is understanding the goals and dreams of your team And so if you can align that point you just made with, you know, aligning their skill set with something that's going to advance their goals and dreams, boy, that's how this inspiration thing starts working.
It really begins to work in a powerful sort of way. And I think this is a principle that so many supervisors have missed because they see at hand the task to be done. There's a mission to be accomplished. There are numbers to be made. We don't have time to be sitting around with this inspiration stuff. Well, the truth is that I can guarantee you, I can point to organizations who focus on this principle. And when they do, they're more productive, they're more engaged, their employees are more passionate, and their bottom line shows up in ways that are superior. And it's really a matter of sitting down and taking time to begin to notice, wow, I can sit and take time to observe where somebody's really strong, little latent abilities that perhaps they don't use on a regular basis. Then to name it, almost very similar to what I just said with Stone, to be specific about what it is I see in another person's life. It's more than just saying, hey, you work hard. It's telling you very specifically what I see in you that's coming out. And then third, to nurture it. Put it in the program. Put it in the actual evaluation assessment kind of work so that people know that you're serious about nurturing what you see.
I don't even work for him, and I feel a lot better since he mentioned my name.
Absolutely.
But and it all does. It certainly all sounds good, and it feels good, and makes for a kinder, gentler workplace. But what you're saying is, the inspiration factor is directly correlated to the bottom line. It has a genuine impact on the bottom line.
Absolutely. We just finished a little survey we're going to publish a white paper and the release on it in 2 weeks. Fascinating survey. We asked people around the country to give to us the most inspiring companies in America. They then described to us, to make sure we were on the same page, what they saw as being inspiring. And what, first of all, this is important, what they saw as being inspiring were companies who were truly helping somebody else make a difference. They were leaving the world a better place, and they made their employees and the consumers want to be a better person. So with that in mind, they begin to rank in almost this this logical kind of fashion these companies that they considered to be inspiring. And what we found is that sometimes those companies who were most inspiring, truth was, by looks of the consumer, they couldn't tell if they were for-profit or not for-profit, because all the good that they began to do. So the perception is these companies were incredibly lucrative, highly successful, but by the very nature of being inspirational, they're also the most profitable names that you would know and recognize from the exchange. So yes, it shows up on the bottom line.
One of the things that really struck me as we were doing a little bit of research in preparation for the show is this idea, and I think it's captured in the title of the book, of changing culture in a matter of weeks. I think you said like 10 or 12 weeks. Is that really possible to have a substantial shift in culture that's meaningful in that space of time?
I think it's absolutely positively possible. And I don't care how large the organization is. Now, bear in mind that when I define culture, what I'm talking about is team by team. So as each team, no matter where you are within the organization, you may be at the bottom level. This stuff is infectious, and it can begin to be spread to other teams. They become the driving force for inspiration within the organization. How much more effective, if you could possibly imagine at the executive level, if they would begin to practice and deploy these principles, how it can have an overarching, compelling, infectious kind of effect through the organization. So yes, it can happen.
Well, I mean, to me, that's inspirational in and of itself, because I can't tell you how many gurus that you'll read and they'll talk about this 3 to 5 year culture shifting process. And I'm thinking, and I'm a consultant, and my eyes get weary when I read something like that. So, I mean, to me, that is very inspirational that you can actually affect some genuine change in the space of a few weeks if you adopt some of these principles. I was also on your website, and one of the things that I love, there's just a little quickie 7 or 8 question thing. Does your boss do this, or how would life be if your boss behaved in this fashion? I love that. And one of the things that I found particularly encouraging, and it made me reflect, I had a boss that did those things. And I really do believe it made all the difference in the world. Share with us what a couple of those questions were, if you recall what's on your website.
Yeah, and actually, what I mentioned, it's part of my blog at theinspirationfactor.com. If you want to go look, there are 7 things that a boss needs to practice saying. And it's actually applied interpretation of, if you would, of the very principles that are in the book.
Yeah.
So, for example, the very first one out of that principle of authenticity, that one of the things the boss needs to practice saying is, excuse me, I misspoke. I said something I maybe shouldn't have said, team. Will you forgive me? And I promise I'm going to be a better, more effective leader going forward. Can you imagine what would happen with a team to have a boss be able to say that? I had a boss who actually illustrated that for me in real life, and what a difference it makes in terms of just having loyalty towards that particular individual.
But they are, you and I are very lucky, very fortunate in that regard, because I did too, but I think they're probably very few and far between, aren't they,
bosses like that? It's really true. But you know what? I don't, it's not that I don't think bosses as a whole don't want to do that. They've just like in the fact that maybe we have seen that, they have not seen that, they've not experienced that, but it's no excuse for them not to be able to mentor that and illustrate that out of their own life for their own group of people.
So how can our listeners get in touch with you, learn more about your work? And since most of them don't have their own radio show and a direct channel to a free book like we do, how can they find out about this book and purchase this book? What's the best way for them to get in touch with you?
The best thing to do is go to Inspiration Boulevard, BLVD.com, and you can find the book there and lots of great resources. The book's also available at Barnes & Noble and Borders and a host of other great bookstores. It's on Amazon and on and on. So it's very easily to it's easy to find. And if you forget in any way, all you got to do is go to Google and type in Terry Barber Inspires, and you'll find just a ream of paper there in links that will take you there.
Well, and now that you've been on the High Velocity Radio Show, there's no telling where all you'll pop up on the search engines. You'd probably be on Fox News tonight, don't you think, Todd?
Oprah, yeah.
Yeah.
Flood's coming.
Yeah.
And if people want you to come and inspire their people, they just write you a check and...
Yeah, just contact me, and I also have a great group of folks who help support us in that regard. So, yeah, love to do that.
But I get the sense that, all kidding aside, it's not a matter of calling you in on your white horse to swoop in and inspire everybody. I suspect it really is more involved than that. It's a collaborative effort, and you work together to help instill these principles in the culture.
Yeah, it's a great process where we typically begin with an opening presentation, but it's really all about working with those supervisors in a coaching kind of fashion to help them become more effective at inspiring those around them. It's never going to work just to be able to bring me or Zig Ziglar or anybody in as far as that goes and say, okay, now we're considered ourselves inspired.
Even Todd Schnick couldn't pull that off.
Even Todd would not be able to pull it off. But
well, yeah, probably not.
Well, it has been an absolute delight having you on the show, and I hope you'll come back with us sometime, share some of those parables maybe that you mentioned earlier, and share some of your successes. But before we let you go, Terry, we have a little tradition here on the High Velocity Radio Show. We like to ask each guest, if they would, to share a mistake that they've made at some point in their career, and really, more importantly, what they feel like they learned from it. Could we get you to do that for us?
Yeah, do you mind if I share it out of my personal life?
Not at all.
Because I still think it has great application for us, especially in this principle of authenticity and being vulnerable.
Yeah.
And my story that I'll share, it has to do with one day I'm actually going through my closet, and I'm enraged because I cannot find my white shirt with the French cuffs that I was totally excited about wearing for this particular event, and it just made me think, the cleaners guy, he still has it. So I go back down to the cleaners, and I'm saying, you got to look for this shirt. I know, Mr. Barber, your shirt is not here. I'm just telling you, it's not here. So I leave, I go look again, I come back, and this time I'm really angry. You know what? You know good so-and-so, you still have my shirt, and I'm gonna sue your ass. You just wait and see. I want my shirt back. You get in there, you start looking, you look deeper, you look harder, my shirt is here. So, of course, he couldn't find it. I go back home, and I say, okay, I'm going to take one more look. And I swear, in the back of the closet, I pulled it out. I found the stinking shirt. And my face was red, and there was just this thing inside of me where you know that you screwed up, and it's not one of those things you can just go blow off and just think, oh, well, he'll never see me again, you know?
Because you can't go back there again anymore.
Yeah, so what did I do? I went back to him, and I brought the shirt in, and I said, look, you don't have to forgive me, but I'm asking you to forgive me. I really was out of line about this, and please, if we could just shake hands and press forward, then I'll be a good customer. And he did. And I'd continue to be a great customer for days to come. But yeah, that was not easy. But it was a defining moment because it helped me to know that, yeah, not only am I not perfect, but when I do mess up, there is an opportunity to potentially go back and make my relationships better and stronger by owning up to it and be responsible for it.
What a great piece of advice. I mean, and that, you know, that meant a lot to that guy. You know, when you went back, and I'm sure it was healing and cathartic for you as well.
It was.
And we all screw up enough to have plenty of opportunities to do that. And I can tell you, I've come home many a time and said, we can't go back there anymore. Well, maybe we could go back to some of those places if I would follow your model, Terry.
Great principle.
Well, I'm reading Tom Peters' new book, and one of his points is the two most powerful words you could ever say is, I'm sorry. And it's kind of applicable to that story, and that sometimes you just need to say, hey, and that's, I think, what you're talking about, being vulnerable.
Yes.
It's just lay it out there on the line, and I actually believe that deepens their relationship. I think that your cleaners is going to probably try to do better service for you because of the fact that you did that. May bend over backwards and try to do better jobs to avoid getting attacked like you did before. But I think that your outreach to him was a very powerful moment for both sides. So that's a great story.
Well, thank you for being vulnerable for us and for jacking up our inspiration factor. You certainly did it around here, and we really would like to have you back sometime.
Great. Look forward to it.
Well, until next time, this is Stone Payton, Todd Schnick, our guest Terry Barber with the Inspiration Factor, our producer Lee Cantor, and everyone here at the Radio X family saying we'll see you in the fast lane.